Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Radical Candor, fully revised and updated edition by Kim Scott, is a management and leadership book about improving workplace relationships through clear, humane communication, drawing on Scott's experience as a leader at Google and Apple and as a coach to executives. The book argues that managers do their best work when they combine two behaviors that are often treated as opposites: caring personally about people and challenging them directly. Its purpose is practical rather than theoretical. Scott gives managers a vocabulary for diagnosing poor feedback habits, a set of routines for building trust, and a framework for helping teams perform without relying on fear, avoidance, or vague encouragement. The revised edition expands the original argument with additional guidance, including material on performance reviews and clarification around common misunderstandings of the concept. The book belongs to the modern workplace leadership genre, but its central concern is interpersonal, how authority can be exercised honestly without becoming dehumanizing. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the Radical Candor Quadrant explains why feedback often fails. The central framework of the book is a two-axis model built around caring personally and challenging directly. Scott uses it to distinguish radical candor from three common failure modes. Obnoxious aggression occurs when a manager challenges directly without sufficient care, producing feedback that may be clear but feels disrespectful or unsafe. Ruinous empathy occurs when a manager cares but avoids direct challenge, often because they do not want to hurt someone's feelings. Manipulative insincerity is the lowest trust mode, where a person neither cares enough to be honest nor challenges enough to help. The value of the quadrant is that it separates intent from impact. A manager may believe they are being kind by avoiding criticism, but the result can be delayed growth, unclear expectations, and damage to the team. Likewise, directness alone is not a virtue if it ignores the person receiving the feedback. The model is memorable because it does not reduce leadership to being nice or being tough. It shows that useful guidance depends on the combination of personal concern and operational clarity. This makes feedback less about personality style and more about observable behavior that can be adjusted. Secondly, caring personally requires professional relationships with real human context. Need as Scott's idea of caring personally is not a call for managers to erase boundaries or turn workplaces into families. It means recognizing employees as whole people whose motivations, ambitions, pressures, and limits affect their work. The book challenges a narrow version of professionalism that treats personal concern as irrelevant or inappropriate. For Scott, a boss cannot give effective guidance if they understand only a person's tasks and not the context in which that person makes choices. This is why she emphasizes regular one-on-one conversations, active listening, and curiosity about what matters to each direct report. Caring personally also creates the permission structure for direct challenge. Feedback is easier to hear when the recipient has evidence that the manager is invested in their development rather than merely protecting status, speed, or metrics. At the same time, the book acknowledges that boundaries differ by person. A radically candid relationship is not created by forced intimacy. It is negotiated through consistency, respect, and attention. This aspect of the book is important because it treats trust as a management responsibility. Strong relationships are not a soft supplement to performance. They are the conditions under which difficult conversations become productive rather than defensive. Thirdly, soliciting criticism first changes the power dynamic of management. One of the book's most practical recommendations is that managers should ask for criticism before giving it. Scott argues that direct reports are more likely to trust feedback from a boss who has demonstrated a willingness to be corrected. This matters because authority distorts communication. Employees often know what is going wrong but avoid saying it because they fear consequences, wasted effort, or social discomfort. By actively soliciting criticism, a manager lowers the perceived cost of honesty and models the behavior expected from the team. The practice also protects radical candor from being misused as a license to deliver blunt opinions downward. If candor only travels from boss to employee, it can easily become a nicer name for command and control. Scott's approach asks managers to prove that challenge is mutual, not hierarchical privilege. The book also emphasizes that praise and criticism should be specific, sincere, and tied to behavior rather than vague personality judgments. Good praise shows what to repeat, and good criticism shows what to change. This makes guidance actionable. The point is not to create constant confrontation, but to make feedback frequent enough that it becomes normal, timely, and less emotionally loaded. Fourthly, rock stars and superstars need different forms of support. Scott's distinction between rock stars and superstars is one of the book's more useful contributions to talent management. Superstars are people on a steep growth trajectory who want new challenges, advancement, and increasing responsibility. Rock stars are strong performers on a more gradual or stable trajectory who may be deeply skilled, reliable, and satisfied in their current roles. The distinction is not a ranking of worth. Scott warns that organizations often overvalue ambition and undervalue consistency, even though teams need both types of contribution. A manager who treats every high performer as if they want promotion may push a rock star into unwanted change, while a manager who assumes everyone wants stability may fail to challenge a superstar enough. The practical implication is that motivation must be individualized. Managers need to understand not only whether someone is performing well, but also what kind of growth or stability that person wants at a particular stage. This requires career conversations rather than generic performance management. The concept also helps prevent a common managerial error confusing potential with loyalty, or assuming that retention depends on the same incentives for everyone. Scott's framework encourages leaders to align roles, feedback, and opportunity with actual human goals. Lastly, the Get Stuff Done wheel turns candor into collaborative execution. Radical candor is not only a theory of feedback, it is also a system for team results. Scott's Get Stuff Done wheel describes a sequence for collaborative execution: listen, clarify, debate, decide, persuade, execute, and learn. The logic is that teams do better work when they are involved early enough to improve the decision, not merely informed after a leader has already chosen a direction. Listening gathers information from people closest to the work. Clarifying turns scattered input into a coherent problem or proposal. Debate tests ideas before commitment. Deciding creates accountability. Persuading helps people understand why the decision matters, especially those who are not in the room. Executing moves from agreement to action. Learning closes the loop by examining what happened and adjusting. This process connects candor to organizational performance because honest communication is needed at every stage. Without it, leaders may receive filtered information, debates may become political, and postmortems may avoid the real causes of failure. The framework also shows a limitation of the book's approach. Radical candor works best where managers have enough authority and psychological safety to invite disagreement. In rigid or punitive cultures, the method may require broader organizational change before it can function fully. In conclusion, radical candor is best suited for managers, team leads, founders, executives, and professionals who manage upward or across teams. It is especially useful for people who struggle with the false choice between being liked and being effective. Readers gain a practical vocabulary for recognizing feedback patterns, a set of habits for building trust, and a clearer understanding of how to tailor management to different motivations. The book's intellectual benefit is that it reframes leadership as a relationship-based discipline rather than a personality trait. Its practical benefit is that it gives managers concrete routines, such as asking for criticism first, making feedback specific, holding meaningful one-on-ones, and using collaborative decision processes. Compared with many leadership books that stay at the level of values or inspiration, Scott's work stands out because it links a simple diagnostic model to everyday management behavior. Its Silicon Valley examples may not fit every industry equally, and the advice can be harder to apply in highly hierarchical or unsafe workplaces. Even so, the book remains distinctive because it addresses a universal managerial problem: how to tell the truth in a way that helps people grow. Its lasting relevance comes from treating honesty and care as mutually dependent rather than competing virtues. If you would like to support Kim Scott, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.